Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Ryan, your host for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, on which I bring you music reviews from music lovers. Thank you guys for listening. This is episode 21, and today I'm going to be reviewing new releases from London-based band Good Tiger, MGMT, the supergroup Legend of the Seagull Men, and also Ezra Furman. So these are all releases... Or these albums, I should say, were all released on February 9th. And before we get to those reviews, I'd just like to mention a couple other albums that I think you should check out if you feel inclined. One is the new Fu Manchu record, Clone of the Universe. That's a good one. Another good record to check out is the soundtrack, or the sort of curated soundtrack to for the Black Panther movie, Black Panther the Album. And that's, you know, obviously by various artists. I believe it was curated by Kendrick Lamar. So definitely check that out. And also, there's a new record from the Wombats. That's Wombat, W-O-M-B-A-T. New record called Beautiful People Will Ruin Your Life. So check that out too. That's another good one. All right, so moving into the reviews for today, the first record I would like to review is a record called We Will All Be Gone by the London-based band Good Tiger. Good Tiger, which is a... sort of a super group that's comprised of Elliot Coleman, who was formerly of the band Tesseract, on vocals, the guitarists Daria Nagel and Joaquin Ardiles, who were formerly of a band called The Safety Fire, drummer Alex Rudinger, Alex Rudinger, formerly of a band called The Faceless, and Morgan Sinclair, who plays guitar on tour with the band Architects. This collective, if you will, have returned with an album called We Will All Be Gone. It's a follow-up to 2015's record A Head Full of Moonlight. And my feelings regarding this new record are somewhat complicated. And I think this is due in large part to this sort of streamlining of the band sound that's happened on this newest record. A Head Full of Moonlight was... full of sort of dynamics that for me make great metal. Light and shade, you know, an ability to sort of speed things up and slow them back down naturally or organically. You know, and a healthy balance of technical ability and play from your heart earnestness. That interplay, you know, sometimes it was a little bit awkward on A Head Full of Moonlight. Didn't always work perfectly, but for the most part, they succeeded. Now, this new record, We Will All Be Gone, while still showcasing Good Tiger's musical ability, seems to be more of an exercise in songwriting and composition. You know, gone are the screamed or growled vocals, you know, which leaves listeners with Elliot Coleman as, you know, sort of a siren, capable of the sort of falsetto theatrics on the opening track, which is called The Devil Thinks I'm Sinking. As well as, you know, he's capable also of richer, deeper melodies on something like the closing track, which is called I'll Finish This Book Later. There's a remarkable sense of restraint on the part of guitarists Nagel and Ardiles, you know, whose work, the guitar's work as foundations along with the rhythm section, you know, on a track like Float On, you know, still finding pockets in the mix to be technical, but, you know, with really little to no flash. Best example of this, you know, for the sake of the song approach would be the track Blue Shift on which the band are, I think, the closest to recapturing, you know, some of the magic that they often found on A Head Full of Moonlight. So, but unfortunately, the overall effect of this album, at least upon my first listen, was not really to make my ears perk up. The vibe here reminds me of the vibe that the more cerebral records by the Deftones, you know, struck me. You know, like Deftones' self-titled album, or even their most recent record, which was called Gore. We Will All Be Gone, I'm hoping that it grows on me. I'm sure it will a little bit. It seems to be a record that will unfold and reveal itself more and more with each listen. I'm not going to go out of my way to listen to it, but I'm sure I'll return to it at various times throughout the year. So I gave We Will All Be Gone a rating of 6 out of 10. And for recommended listening, you should check out the tracks Blue Shift and Grip Shoes. All right, so moving on to the second review for today. It is a new record from MGMT called Little Dark Age. So New York's MGMT return with Little Dark Age, their first record since their 2013 self-titled record. After spending two album cycles, you know, experimenting in ways that frustrated and perplexed many of the, you know, their fans of their 2007 debut, Oracular Spectacular, you know, which led some to speculate on whether or not MGMT would continue, you know, as a band, as a duo. Andrew Van Wingarden and Ben Goldwasser have, somewhat ironically, I think, made a very cohesive collection of songs that often explore the end of relationships and the negative effects of our sort of growing, budding dependence on technology and social media in this age. You know, the sort of specter of this rising specter of technology and, you know, what kind of effects, negative effects it can have on human relationships. So the opening track, which is called She Works Out Too Much, tells the superficial tale of a man and a woman who stop seeing each other seemingly because of a difference in motivation regarding physical fitness. Now, the lyrics allude to the idea that the characters, interact through social media, you know, perhaps through Tinder, Facebook, what have you. You know, and this immediately sort of colors the relationship, at least for me, as somewhat hollow and one-dimensional. There's also a female voice that acts as a sort of fitness instructor, you know, and this adds to this, you know, sort of jazzercise feel of the track. Modern humans' addiction to smartphones is also explored on the bouncy track TSLAMP, which stands for Time Spent Looking at My Phone. Also, another interesting sort of juxtaposition of humor, like, you know, lightness and dark humor and sort of invective versus, sunny pop is the track When You Die, which, you know, the sort of jangly 60s pop of the music is paired with, you know, these kind of caustic lyrics for a pretty, you know, darkly hilarious effect. There's also less on-the-nose lyrical allusions to, you know, the detriments of our modern world that creep into tracks like the title track, which is really a trip into goth territory, you know, with some very Gary Newman-esque sort of disembodied vocals. It's not all darkness and angst, though. The tracks Me and Michael and also the track One Thing Left to Try sound like, soundtrack gems from a lost 80s film a la, you know, The Breakfast Club or 16 Candles or something of that nature. The mostly instrumental track Days That Got Away, for me, pushes, you know, it sounds like it pushes the most experimental or psychedelic sound on the album. But it works very well within the parameters of Little Dark Age. The track When You're Small backs off the synthesizers and allows an acoustic guitar to give the track an organic, airy feel of contemplation. And the album closer, which is called Hand It Over, really expresses a sense of resignation, you know, as if MGMT have anticipated a loss of connection with their fans and, you know, are willing to accept the consequences of that loss. You know, one can hope that MGMT stays on track now after, you know, finding their way again for the most part with Little Dark Age. But if this album turns out to be their swan song, at the least they'll have gone out on a positive note. So I gave Little Dark Age a rating of 7.5 out of 10. And for recommended listening, check out the title track, Little Dark Age, and the track Me and Michael. Okay. So for my pick of the week this week, it was actually a tie. I really could not decide which out of these next two records that I'm going to review, you know, was my favorite. They're just too close. So we'll call it a tie. Now, the first record is a record from the supergroup, which is called Legend of the Seagull Men. So I'm just going to start off this with a quote from the band's website. Okay. Legend of the Seagull Men is a genre-destroying supergroup featuring Danny Carey of Tool, Brent Hinds of Mastodon, director Jimmy Hayward, who's directed such films as Jonah Hex and Horton Hears a Who, on guitar, bassist Pete Griffin, who's of Zappa Plays Zappa and Death Clock, lead singer and visionary David the Doctor Dreyer, synth player Chris DiGiovanni, and guitarist Tim Dawson. The members join forces to make cinematic, psychedelic rock. The Seagull Men sing of shipwrecks and giant mutant squid, crafting conceptual rock and roll hymns of epic proportions on their full-length debut, Legend of the Seagull Men. It's fucking legendary. That's a quote from their website, so, which sort of summed it up better than I could have. This is one hell of a collective. And what's great about this record is that, you know, all of the various bands mentioned in the above description, you know, come through somewhat in the sound, some more than others, but, you know, and straight out of the gate on the opener, which is called We Are the Seagull Men, I knew this record would be special. That first track is a great mission statement, and it's also a nice cross-section of the band's sound. It's edgy and it's exciting. It holds back somewhat on the prog rock elements that the band will explore later on. You know, which makes sense given the sort of wacky concept that underlies this record, which is one of a Japanese deep sea diver who is exposed to nuclear fallout, and then he mutates into a giant deep sea diver and ransacks a coastal city to avenge his dead lover who died in the, you know, sort of nuclear apocalypse, if you will. A giant squid and a whale that never sleeps figure into the story too, but in the interest of brevity, I'll let you guys dig deeper into the narrative if you feel so inclined. So after the opening track, then we move into the next track, which is called The Fogger. And this track really dives, you know, and that pun is definitely intended, dives into the album's unique sound, one full of riffage from Hinds, which is, you know, reminiscent of Mastodon's Leviathan days, appropriately enough, given the nautical theme of this record. Eerie synths and sound effects, you know, such, you know, i.e. that of a creaking mast, you know, give the track a cinematic splendor, which really is only heightened on the next track, which is called Ship's Wreck. Yeah, this rock-solid groove gives the listener the impression of a ship, you know, riding wave after wave on a stormy sea, with Dreyer's vocals coming across like something like Scott Kelly of Neurosis with an eye patch, you know, and a hook. Things get even more cinematic on the next track, which is called The Curse of the Red Tide, with an intro that has strings, and it's followed by an all-out charging attack that just instantly evokes in my mind the image of this monstrous diver rising from the sea and just wreaking havoc. A great guitar solo heightens the drama. And at one point, Hinds actually, I believe it's Brent Hinds playing the solo. I couldn't find that out for sure, but it sounds like a Brent Hinds solo. in the solo, he actually mimics, and I don't know if it's intentionally or not, but he mimics the almost like the calls of seagulls with his guitar, and it actually made me laugh out loud the first time I heard it. But and then on the title track, Legend of the Seagullmen, which follows, that's really a straight up rock burner. That's, you know, more in line with the opening track, putting aside the prog elements for a little while. You know, this shift in sound, along with a sort of interesting breaking of the fourth wall that Dreyer uses in the chorus, gives this track the feeling of almost like an intermission, or giving the listener like a brief respite. Although on a record that's about 40 minutes long, that's sort of unnecessary. So I thought it was kind of an odd choice, but certainly not anything that took away from my enjoyment of the record. All right, so from there, the band, you know, really just burned their way through a track called The Orca, and also a track called Rise of the Giant, you know, bringing things to a head on the closing track, which is called Ballad of the Deep Sea Diver, which is it's a stirring combo of prog rock and Ennio Morricone style theatricality that really matches the band's description of the record as a quote-unquote nautical spaghetti western. Legend of the Seagullmen is a shining example of just what can happen when the right group of musicians get together and have some fun. It's not a perfect record by any means, but you won't have this much fun, you know, with too many other supergroups. So, all right, so I gave Legend of the Seagullmen a rating of 8 out of 10. And for recommended listening, check out the tracks Ship's Wreck and The Ballad of the Deep Sea Diver. Okay, so moving on to the other record that's part of the tie this week for Pick of the Week. It is the new record from Chicago's Ezra Furman, who was formerly of the band Ezra Furman and the Harpoons, and more recently Ezra Furman and the Boyfriends. Okay, so Furman returns with the follow-up to his 2012 record, The Year of No Returning, with a record called Transangelic Exodus. As a queer man who identifies as gender fluid and also a practicing Jew, you know, Furman already had a pretty unique worldview before this record. And on this record, he filters this worldview through this sort of kaleidoscopic lens of musical and lyrical influence that, you know, includes both the protest tradition of somebody like Woody Guthrie, and the sort of on the run anthemic aesthetic of Bruce Springsteen, while also pulling from influence from modern artists like Kendrick Lamar and Angel Olsen. The result is a subversive gem of a record that is both instantly appealing and accessible, you know, while at the same time unsettling, disquieting at times, and cathartic in a way that, you know, conjures up this image of a bruised and battered but ultimately stable narrator by album's end. Here's a breakdown of the record's loose concept from an interview that Furman did with ConsequenceOfSound.net. The narrative thread is, I'm in love with an angel and a government is after us, and we have to leave home because angels are illegal, as is harboring angels. The term transangelic refers to the fact that people become angels because they grow wings. They have an operation and they're transformed, and it causes panic because some people think it's contagious or it should just be outlawed. The album still works without the backstory, though. What's essential is the mood, paranoid, authoritarian, the way certain people are stigmatized. It's a theme in American life right now and other so-called democracies, end of quote. So the opening track on the album, which is called Suck the Blood from My Wound, establishes this cinematic aesthetic of the record as the narrator of the lyrics rescues an angel or a man who has undergone a transformation known as transangelicism, in which a human being grows wings and reveals their true form. In the world of Furman's concept, this has been outlawed, and now Furman and his angel are on the run from the law. So, knowing that Furman is queer and gender fluid makes the symbolism here relatively easy to navigate. It's the delivery of this package, which, you know, is like Springsteen with a drum machine as a musical backdrop, you know, and a raspy Furman describing hospital room escapes and the shaky promise of escape, you know, in a red Camaro that just makes the track great. It's also worth noting that even Furman's, you know, one self-admitted political statement on this record is the line, "A plague on both your houses," from Romeo and Juliet, which, you know, he screeches over some noisy wash, you know, noisy sort of pseudo industrial wash at the end of this track. It's a line that could sort of slip by the less attentive listener, but, you know, the jab at, you know, both the Republican and Democratic parties here is pretty obvious if you're paying attention. So now from there, Furman spends, you know, the majority of the record sort of like a child that can't sit still. And that is the overarching feeling that radiates from these songs for me. Less cinematic, you know, in lyrical content, but not in musical aesthetic. The songs that make up the bulk of the record explore feelings, you know, like nostalgic teenage transcendence, as on the track Driving Down to L.A., Furman's unique take on faith on the track God Lifts Up the Lowly, and paranoia due to an unstable home environment on a track like No Place. Now, this restlessness is not confined to Furman's vocals, as displayed, you know, by the tribal drumbeat and gang vocal flourishes on the track The Great Unknown, and the Johnny Marr-esque guitar work and spastic synths on the track Maraschino Red Dress, $8.99 at Goodwill. The track From a Beach House stands as a sort of midway point for this record, on which a listener finds the album's narrator holed up in an abandoned beach house in a New England town, you know, on the off season, spending 4 days collecting other people's throwaway items and waiting for a phone call, even though the narrator broke the phone from his lover. So this song, one of the great things about this song is that it exemplifies Furman's talent for clever lyrics. On this track, he uses the cryptic line, 4 days alone, hiding in a yellow beach house full of beetles and stones, which is great. It just conveys the starkness and the desolate state of the house, you know, while also alluding to two of rock and roll's most famous bands. So cellos and drums, along with, you know, an almost breathless vocal from Furman, give the track Love You So Bad an earnestness that makes its flawed narrator, who, you know, quote unquote, always knew he was bad, impossible not to identify with in a sort of longing, youthful manner. The track Come Here, Get Away From Me is an almost noirish subterranean tune where Furman sounds like a manic Jack White to me. The short interlude-ish track Peel My Orange Every Morning is the only one on the album that I question the necessity of, even though it has some interesting lyrical imagery, i.e. Furman using the image of peeling an orange's tough peel to expose the soft insides, you know, as a metaphor for opening himself up to others in the world. And it also has a great image of a hotel employee sweeping up and discarding the pieces of peel left behind from the orange, erasing any traces of this important moment for the narrator from the world. Now, like I said, this is the only track on the album that doesn't stick in my mind, and I can't help but find that sort of ironic, because I become listener as, you know, hotel housekeeping employee, and it's a strange experience for me. So Furman has claimed in interviews that the penultimate track, which is called Psalm 151, acts as the end of the narrative concept that was begun on the opening track, Suck the Blood from My Wound. And the lyrical images in Psalm 151 of a female angel, you know, harboring the narrator and telling him about this psalm that isn't included in the original 150 psalms is fitting, especially since Furman, you know, also revealed in an interview that he wrote the lyrics to this song not knowing that there actually is a Bible-era Psalm 151, which is about David and Goliath. And that's an appropriate parallel, given that the concept in the album's narrative deals with a, you know, character most assumed to be vulnerable, battling and ultimately defeating, in a sense, a much larger, stronger adversary. So it can be viewed as, you know, the narrator and Furman's hope for the future. So the last track, which is called I Lost My Innocence, you know, with its sort of Beach Boys vibe, is a reflective moment on this album. This was an album that, you know, it spends its time both looking forward and backward. Furman uses the memory of his first strong attraction and interaction with a boy named Vincent to pinpoint the moment at which his entire life and his outlook changed. After this moment, Furman knew he was going to live his life on the margins, you know, of his society, but also that he wouldn't accept being ostracized. So, you know, and therein lies the heart of this record. It's a record that reminisces and hopes, you know, just as its narrator is also looking over his shoulder in paranoia, you know, and ahead to the future, you know, in equal measure. It's restless, it's compulsive, you know, it's caustic, and it's endearing. And it's disarmingly honest, which, you know, which all great art should be. So I gave Transangelic Exodus a rating of 8 out of 10. And for recommended listening, check out the track Suck the Blood from My Wound and Love You So Bad. All right, well, that wraps up today's reviews. Catch up with me next time for episode 22, on which I will be reviewing new releases from Car Seat Headrest, Harakiri for the Sky, Laurie Anderson and the Kronos Quartet, and Born Ruffians. All right, so that wraps up episode 21. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Ryan for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, signing off. Have a great day.